From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live.
To be money.
My name's Carr. With my BFS, Austin and Keon, this week. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello. That's how I say hello.
Keon, how was your week?
It was great. Sort of. My underwear are backwards today. I just realized. Just maybe an indication of how my week went.
Backwards?
I think you would know. You think I would have known earlier, but I didn't figure that out until now.
Austin, how was your week?
It was pretty good. A little tiring. I kind of just like... have been so tired, but like vibes are high. It's gratitude
nice.
Is in my heart.
You were traveling this week, right?
I got back on Sunday, very late night, which is why I'm tired. But it was good. Yeah. I went to the Bitcoin country. Is that what people call it?
Oh, is that like,
El Salvador?
El Salvador.
Oh, okay. Thought you meant like there's like a rural place. Like prairies, and they have like herds of cows. Okay.
Now, interesting fact, El Salvador translates to the Salvador.
Well, that's not very fun.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
That killed in the airport.
I don't think that's real.
Oh, is it not true? Is
no.
It Salvador mean something?
Yes.
It does mean something, yeah.
What does it mean?
I don't know.
Salvation?
I'd have to go look. I actually wrote an article on Salvador, like in 21. See if it comes up. Salvador.
Do you get into the meaning
Bitcoin
of the word?
Thriller. See if it comes
up. Do you ever
Salvador.
Google your name?
No.
Yeah. You all ever do that?
I've done it before.
I guess it doesn't
done
show
it
up.
Anonymous? It's scary.
But
I feel like yours would be pretty scary.
We just got some people coming into the office, so kind of weird. Anyways, we're going to jump into the top.
You get like a drape, you know, like a curtain.
I know.
Yeah. That'd be kind of cool.
We're going to jump into the top five stories of the week on Stacker.news, the front page of Bitcoin. If you've never seen this crazy show, it's called Stacker News Live, where we dive into all that kind of stuff. You know, this we got this guy over here, Keon. He likes talking about ponies and all sorts of things. And then, that doesn't work. That's not helping, Car. And then we got me fumbling with the keyboard all the time. But what we do have is a YouTube channel that is probably streaming this right now. I mean, it is. Whoa.
Like
if you haven't hit it, hit that subscribe button, hit the bell, do all those things. And, like, yeah, Wumble's doing clips and stuff. So hit up Wumble if you need some clips. And check out our past live streams. We're also on the good old Spotify. So, check out Spotify. Anyways, just wanted to give that a quick show. But with all that, let's dive into the top five stories of the week on Stacker News. The number five top story is a cypherpunk disagreement that lives on. This is from Siggy47, 16 comments, 1931 sats, and the politicals and law territory. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, Siggy's been reading the Genesis book. And he found a reference to an exchange between Tim May, I think it was by Timothy May is how we usually hear it pronounced, although that might be a serial killer. So maybe his name is actually Tim May. Tim May and Hal Finney, they're discussing, the dynamics of cyberspace, like how humans coordinate and give each other permission in cyberspace, what sort of like... how laws might work in cyberspace. And Hal Finney's reply is like, well, I just don't believe in cyberspace as being a thing really until I'm like living in it. It's like a, you know, it's like a metaphor. So it's kind of weird talking about it. Like it's not a metaphor. And in reality, I'm governed by the laws of the government. I'm a subject of. In physical reality, and anyway, that sort of a philosophical discussion, where you could talk about cyberspace in terms of like under these in cyberspace, under the rules of cyberspace, this is what will happen. Siggy likens it to MMA, where no one can pull a gun on you. So it's like not really reality, not real fighting, in the sense of like what you'll encounter from a violent person.
I don't know. I feel like the old MMA was very much like you could die.
Well, you did.
I mean, the MMA in the 90s, that was pretty bad.
I mean, I recall watching Rogan and them showing like clips of the old fights where they didn't have weight. That was all one weight class.
There was this thing called pay-per-view, Austin. It was a box that you had to order from in the 90s. It was crazy. But
like
you
a had black box?
It was like a box. Yeah, it was a box that sat on your TV set, and you'd order these pay-per-view events. And some of them were from the MMA, and it was extremely violent.
Did you not have one of those like illegal boxes?
No. Did you have one of those?
I believe people that I know had them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I personally didn't have
those. Are the equivalent of those, like, Raspberry Pis that they sell that has all the movies and all the channels. That's what that was, Austin.
But you get, like, a guy would come over, and he'd be, like, you know, just a
your
guy,
parents?
A guy you, had, you like, knew a toolbox. And,
yeah, usually, like, you could hit up the cable guy and, like,
you
my
bribe
older
him?
Brother tried to do that. I don't think it worked, though.
My parents probably like paid him in drugs or something, but I think he hooked up.
I was too young. I just remember watching that stuff as a kid, and it was like super violent. And I would just go to the other room and play like Nintendo or something.
The adults loved it.
Yeah, the adults loved it. Anyways,
it's a deep question. I mean, this is like the deepest question because it's like, to me, it's like physicality versus metaphysicality. And it's like, well, cyberspace isn't real, but it's like, well, if cyberspace affects and in certain situations controls meat space, then how real is it?
Perhaps increasingly real, but maybe never so real that it's maybe like a layer, like an overlay. It's like Tor is still subject to TCP/IP stuff, even though it's...
when you guys say cyberspace, can you give me your definition of it, just so that we're all on the same page of cyberspace?
What is the definition of cyberspace? I think it's just
like the internet?
Online. You're online. Yeah, being online with other people, connected digitally. Your information is present online and moving around. That's what I would... Do you have a better?
I mean, yeah, basically online, but just the non-material of existence, which is like language and like even blueprints and like anything that is immaterial that expresses the material but does not adhere to the rules of the material, which is basically information. And it's to say it's like information space or like, you know.
Well, I mean, I think especially people from religious traditions would do you like a soul isn't information, is it?
Well, I mean, it could
that's
be.
Immaterial, but
yeah,
but it could just be information.
Well, and this is where you like conflate. You end up conflating the information space with the spiritual, and like because it's like, what's the difference? Because it's not physical stuff that makes that breathes life into the physical stuff. So what does that make it?
Yeah.
I think that what I take away from this is that it's like almost one of those, because there's the slippery slope fallacy, and then there's the slippery slope fallacy. Mm. And it's just like, it's like where you end up at zero, where it's like, well, there's this thing that might happen, but also there's this thing that where because people expect the thing to happen, they over expect it and they don't account for it. So you end up at this impasse where it's like, there is no reality to cyberspace. That is true. It has no effect. It's just information. But then on the other side, it's fully real. It affects the real world. It is the future. And like kind of that contradictory idea that kind of both of those things are true but untrue at the same time.
Mm. Yeah.
I hope that's not too philosophical. But no, for me, it's just like they're ideas that you counterbalance.
This set of stories today is going to be of that quality. It gets
it makes me think of like the deeper meaning to all that, Austin. Then that would be like, if you die online, do you die in real life? Or if you die in real life, do you die online? That's what that, like, I would want to get to like the heart of the, because that's what you're ultimately talking about. Like, you're talking about your life and your death between these two realities. At least that's how I see as the heart of the whole conversation, but
so if you can't die online, it's not real.
Well, I'm saying, like, this gets me thinking, like, maybe the real part of the question that we're asking is, like, if you die online, does a part of you die in reality? Or if you die in reality, do you potentially die online?
Well, I think in both cases.
But
there's some relationship to dying in one space and its effect on you in the other.
But, like, somebody like Hal, like, I feel like he's alive.
Yeah, it's ironic that Hal took the position against it, but in a lot of ways, like, we keep him so alive in spirit, or at least some, you know, bastardized image we have of him.
Yeah, some telephoned version of him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it just makes you think about that, like, the bigger question.
Yeah, it sounds like he would say he's not still alive.
Yeah, he would say, you all are retarded.
Yeah, he's like, I'm fucking dead, I'd like to be alive. That's what he would say.
Well, maybe the difference then is just in the actions that you take between the two realities, right?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, you're saying that the reason that he's not alive, or he would much rather be alive, is because he can act. He can choose to like do something, right? Or he can exist. But I would argue, like, well, then maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just between the actions between the two is what separates the...
Okay, so if you can still act, you're alive. That sounds like what you're saying. And so maybe if Hal were still able to act online, he would still be alive online. And cyberspace would be real.
And I think he kind of is already. Or, like, people do that. I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, the door isn't closed. The door isn't closed. Technically, Hal is a little bit here in meat space, in a meat freezer, really, as much as he is in cyberspace. Yeah, I forgot about
that. Yes.
You know, maybe in like 1,000 years.
I think I saw something. Something was shared on Stack News in the science territory that they, I think with a small sample, they were able to like rehydrate or like bring back to life some cryogenically frozen brain cells. So it might be closer than you think.
Really? I know there's a company in Austin called, is it Venetech or something like that? They clone dogs, but maybe that's not the same thing.
Dude.
Let's clone Hal Finney into a dog. Let's go.
That'd be dope.
Op dog.
Crypto dog.
That's a great story. Like good that. One, Siggy. The number 4 top story this week is Josh doesn't know where Bitcoin gets its value. This is from Scoresby, February 6th, Bitcoin territory, 41 comments, 5,872 sats. Keon, who's Josh?
Josh Levine, I believe, is an economist, at least writes online. Someone shared a story that he wrote. I think this is a wrong link, and Scoresby shares in a pinned comment the right one. But he wrote about basically this philosophical problem that many people have with Bitcoin. For instance, Elvis Mercury and I have had a discussion about this before, but basically most money is we can trace them back to a point where they weren't treated as money, but they had intrinsic value. And so that's kind of what Josh is writing about, is that Bitcoin doesn't have that like base case. It doesn't have that starting point where it starts with intrinsic value and then bootstraps monetary value. And so he has a hard time appreciating Bitcoin because he can't find what that thing is. And I've had this same discussion with Elvis Mercury. Elvis Mercury calls it a grounding problem. It's more philosophical language. But like, what preceded Bitcoin having monetary value? What value preceded Bitcoin having monetary value? And it's not intrinsic value because Bitcoin is digital. So what is it? And so Scoresby kind of unpacks Josh's complaints and links to some relevant economic theory. I think they call this the regression theorem, or the Meesian regression theorem is what they end up calling it. I can't scroll. But because Mises had this problem, and he just describes how a commodity gets money by tracing it back to the point where it wasn't money. And then he also references Voskal's interpretation of this as where you can actually, like, where did, like, the determination that something, that even a commodity had utility was subjective. And so you can now perform perform regression on that, that as well, and keep going through regressions and end up at the same problem even with a commodity money, is Voskal's argument. Anyway, it's just a interesting thing to think about, because I don't think anyone has a really great answer and has really figured this out. And Scoresby ends by citing some of the, I think it was Hal, or maybe it was Satoshi on the old Bitcoin Talk forums, but says that maybe Bitcoin's value bootstraps from just the collectability of having a UTXO early. Like maybe it has a variety of, these kind of base cases or these, groundings. And then from there, it bootstraps monetary value. And awesome. Anyway, just
what do you think, Austin?
If we're staying philosophical, there's this philosophical idea called Agrippa's trilemma. Have you ever heard of it, Keon?
I've heard of it. I don't know what it is, though.
And so it's this idea that, like, any why question that you follow ends in one of three places. And these three places are either infinite regression, circular reasoning, which is like the chicken because the egg because the chicken, or an axiom, which is to say just a foundational dogma that you must accept. And I feel like this falls into that category.
Yep.
As they were talking about regression, because it's like, well, maybe I would say Bitcoin's intrinsic value is that I don't need to trust a third party, and that value was interpretable, apparent from day zero as soon as I discovered it. But then you could regress that, like, well, what is that value really? That value to not trust, and, you know, that's really actually this other thing that's deeper. And it's like, okay, we could follow that all the way down, but we're not going to get anywhere, right? Because we're going to end up in an axiom that you don't accept, or a series of reasoning and questions that don't have end.
Okay, so it sounds like you're probably agreeing with Voskal, where it's there actually is no satisfactory answer to this question. And so for gold, you would say, because someone might say, gold satisfies the regression here. It has a sufficient base case, a sufficient grounding, in that it was decorative. It was seen as being pretty, mm-hmm. initially, and was used as jewelry. But you're saying that, like Voskal, you're saying that could regress further, like, the axiom you're accepting, I guess, and maybe you're accepting an axiom there, which is where human beings find glittery, malleable metals that are rare, valuable.
Mm-hmm. I guess the axiom I'm accepting is, like, yeah, the Austrian axiom of, like, that value comes from individuals and expressed through human action. And there's, like, a similar idea I've heard that, like, okay, so there's the idea of the rational economic actor in economics, and it's this way to do sense making about how people should act given their incentives. Yeah. But of course, we know that's retarded. Yeah. And actually, the idea that I've heard is that if for you to fully understand my decision, let's say to move to Austin, you would not only have to, like, understand my whole life. You would, because basically in the answer to the reason why did Austin move to Austin is the whole entire universe. You would have to reconstruct the whole entire universe to get a perfect 100% answer to that question. And so the axiom is individualism, and is that it just emerges out of what I did.
I think what you're saying, and at least what I can gather, it sounds like you guys are both saying that it comes at creation. Like, why does Bitcoin have value? It's because it comes at creation. And so when I think about that, I think of, like, okay, the internet became a thing and it became very popular. Therefore, it needed some sort of money that we could transact with. And so maybe what you're getting at is maybe just the creation of Austin coming, the creation of Austin being created, led to him coming to Austin. And so I'm curious. I think overall, I think you're both right, but I think Austin's right about the whole Axiom thing. I think that's just like dead on. But I would wonder, and I haven't done any research, just like riffing here, but I would wonder if there's been anything else at creation that then created something that had value. And I would probably go back to like the Gutenberg Press or something like that. That books became valuable then. Because, I mean, unless we're just strictly talking about money.
I think we're mostly talking about money because it is fairly simple. It doesn't have much utility outside of serving its function as money, especially for Bitcoin. It strictly serves the utility of money and doesn't have, you know, I can't learn by holding Bitcoin in my hardware wallet without other things. Like, but a book, I get utility from it because I can read with it, I can burn it on a fire. So that's where they differ a bit. But it sounds like you agree to some. If you go back to creation, that is an infinite regress, because like if we go back to Austin's creation, then we have to go back to the creation of Austin's parents, and then we have to go. So that is infinite regress. I get the sense that there's probably a more like a satisfactory answer to this, at least something a little more axiomatic looking and less infinite regress looking, something more like the origin story of gold as money. But I don't know what that is. Maybe Satoshi left us a hint in that it has a more diverse.
I feel like a lot of it's already been explained for the most part, right, through the Bitcoin Standard. I mean, we're talking about proof of work. We're talking about a very intricate system here.
Framing of intrinsic value is like, I know that it's such a, it's like a midwit thing to pick at that, but it is like it really is true. It's like, says who? Like, that's what I want to say when someone's like, well, Bitcoin doesn't have intrinsic, intrinsic to who? And once again, this goes back to the infinite regress, because it's like, well, is there an authority? And then you realize there's not. And it's like, we're all the authority. So it's like kind of like none of us, but all of us at the same time.
That's why I like the axiom thing. I like the axiom thing, because some things just don't need explanation.
But you need to point out the axiom. An axiom is like, we can establish the axiom. I mean, I get that this is like, it's pointless at this point, Bitcoin has value, whatever. And we could just say, no one needs to think about this. But this is for someone who likes intellectual puzzles. That's what they're trying to figure out. It's like, how does this like other things that I've seen that play a role as money? How can I tell a story, a coherent story about money, and Bitcoin fits into it?
I mean, if you go back to gold, right? Like, what was it about gold that made everybody want to use it?
The theory goes that it was valued as jewelry, and then eventually people started exchanging it, and then they realized it facilitates exchange very well, and it also stores very well, and it has all these properties of money that we like. But the value originated at something that wasn't its monetary value, that was outside of its monetary value, which was that it had this decorative value. And so, what is Bitcoin's non-monetary value? Its original value before it had, because it didn't have monetary value to begin with. It wasn't even censorship resistant. It wasn't even without a third party.
Wouldn't you call that the programming aspects of it? Because that's kind of like our this day and age's jewelry. Like, what have you? Like, it's creation. It's still creation to a certain extent. Like, they are building. You guys are building on the protocol. So it's kind of similar to wearing it. It's like similar to wearing it. I mean, it's constant iteration of it, of everything. So. I don't know. Something like that makes more sense in my head, but I don't really think about this stuff too often.
It's a fun puzzle, though, because it's funny how quickly you end up in infinite regression. Because if someone is honestly like, you know, why is Bitcoin valuable? I'd be like, well, it's valuable because, you know, a lot of people decide it's valuable because, you know, they value money they don't have to trust, and they value money they don't have to trust. And then, like, I rebuild the history of money for them. And then it's like, well, why, like, even, like, this money thing? You know, like, maybe we could have another way. And I'm like, well, you see, you need money because division of labor. And then you're, like, in this whole you rebuild the whole universe.
Yeah, you'd really like to not have to do that and have an axiom that you stop at, where you have a bookend for it, where you don't have to regress back to telling people about the spin of atoms at the beginning of the universe.
I feel like this is where Vake is going to go stay in your lane. And the first time I actually agree.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I think the pontification of stuff like this is best left to
the philosophers.
To the philosophers in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think it's fun, and I think there is probably a pretty axiomatic answer that you can arrive at.
My axiomatic answer, yes.
All right, the number three top story this week is the Pleb Economist number three on the political economy of block size. Ooh. This econ territory, simple stacker, 8 comments, 12,000 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so Simple Stacker has been writing these Pleb Economist posts, and this one is. References a talk that Jameson Lopp gave at Plan B. I think this one wasn't the one in El Salvador. I think this was in Lugano.
That's what it's
Switzerland. And he talks about the block size wars, and what the ideal block size is, how we can, you know, how maybe we can achieve an ideal block size. The block size proposals that the block size increase or decrease proposals that have been discussed basically just kind of goes through the history of kind of just our discussions about block size and some of the decisions that were made and why they weren't made, why other decisions weren't made. Simple Stacker looks at all of this and thinks that basically concludes that there isn't a technological solution to block size, that whether block size shrinks or increases programmatically on some predictable schedule as a result of like usage or something, it's going to upset someone. And he references his last Pleb Economist post where it talks about social choice theory, which basically means that these kind of complex human consensus activities are necessarily political. That is the conclusion that's been made. And so Bitcoin is likely going to be forever subject to the same, a political process where people are going to be upset by the decisions that made or decisions that aren't made. And it's necessarily part of...
As it should be.
Of Bitcoin.
What did you used to call that? You used to call it layer H or something? What did you see?
Yeah, there were people that were like layer human. There was like a meme last cycle, I think. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. The most important layer in Bitcoin is layer H, not layer 2 or layer 1. It's layer H is like layer 0, we're calling it.
I mean, if you don't get the plebs on board, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Austin, you got anything on this?
It's pretty interesting, like, in the world of, and I feel like this, what would you call this? His heuristic applies to Bitcoin in a lot of ways, and it can apply to life, and it's such an unsatisfying answer. But in a world of, like, unlimited possibilities and micro-improvements and considerations, the most powerful thing to say is no.
Mm.
And just, you know, and with Bitcoin, we can just say no. Comma, it works fine, period. But then it's like, well, maybe, right? Maybe that's not totally true. Maybe we have to reconsider that statement. But that has been the previous response, and something about that response is so strong and so embedded in us to even entertain the idea of making blocks bigger, like, almost makes me physically uncomfortable. And so I think that's a good reaction. That makes me nervous. It's like, oh, I'm really that scared of this idea. But then at the same time, I realize, like, there's no end to this. This is a death by a thousand cuts. And the answer to that is no.
You mean never? You'll never accept a block size change?
Yeah, and kind of like, maybe this is a too big of a stretch of an analogy, but, like, I think about Christianity in Bitcoin terms in a lot of ways of, like, Christianity has a core protocol of, like, Jesus, the Son of God, came to earth, died for our sins, was risen again. And it's like, as long as you agree with that core protocol, you're basically a Christian. But then you might be a Methodist, and you might be a, you know, Baptist or whatever, but it's that that's that core protocol. And when I look at Bitcoin, I maybe this is wrong, but I look at it in those terms. It's like there are certain things that are negotiable, but the things that are not negotiable are the constants, and those constants are the aspects of the protocol, the 21 million, the 10-minute block time, the block size. But then the block size, it's so sticky because we've played with that reality before and already caused secondary consequences from that. So it's like, well, we've played with it before, we can play with it again, but it's like, well, also when we played with it, we opened up, you know, Pandora's box. So those are my incoherent thoughts.
This is great stuff.
You're rolling today, Austin.
Rolling.
Keon, you got anything?
Oh, no, not much more than that. I think I like discussions about block size because I like to think about the future.
You're saying you're a big blocker? Can we get that on the record?
I think you're a big blocker. You told me in private you're a big blocker. You were like really close friends with Roger Ver. You used to do jiu-jitsu with him.
Yeah, I met the guy.
Anyway, but no, I think I'm concerned about fees. Like, I'm, you know, in a future where we've recently gotten empty blocks, and so in a future where there's no block subsidy and we're getting empty blocks, that could be a real problem.
We did get empty blocks this past weekend.
Yeah,
I don't know if you saw that. That was on the ticker. Cool. Good one. The number four top story of the week is: what's your vibe for 25? This is from Pleb Poet.
Pleb Poet.
SN territory, February 4th.
Some relation to Pleb Dev.
59 comments, 1,216 sats. Keon?
Pleb Poet wanted me to communicate that she wishes she could be here. She had a face malfunction. Was her...
Oh, no.
She not her take her term. Substance?
I don't know if she's like secretly a reptilian or something.
Oh. Awesome.
Like, did she not take her substance?
She couldn't get a fresh face.
Did she not? What'd you say? Supply.
Did she not take her substance?
My substance? Oh.
Did you watch that movie?
I did watch that movie.
Oh, man. It's crazy, dude.
That is crazy. I love that movie. But yeah, she's watching and she shares her love. And
JK,
vibe.
JK.
Vibes are high for 25.
Okay. Cool.
She wrote about her vibes. But she asks us here, you know, some general questions about our year and shares her own answers to those questions. What new things are you starting? How does the new political climate feel? We've just had a fairly significant political change by most measures. What one word would you use to describe your vibe so far, I guess, for 2025, or maybe your goal vibe? It sounds like she shared a goal vibe. She's renewing. Mm-hmm. Or, what's your current music, TV, podcast interest? So mm-hmm. a more kind of popular question. Yeah, but a lot of sackers chime in, give their answers.
Yeah, we had Aardvark with a top comment. He said, everything I'm doing this year is related to either Stacker News or Lightning. As far as my political climate goes, it feels pretty different than last year. I used to be really into politics, but not so much anymore. My word for the year is grind. Wow. I have a lot of goals, and I'm keeping after them. Currently, the wife and I are watching Korean cooking shows on Netflix. There you go.
There you go. So we got a lot of answers like that.
What did EK say?
EK
said, I'm not entirely sure what this means. He goes, but I'm finally moving out of my flat, free like a bird. He goes, I also want a dog or a pilot license, but I'm not sure. He says,
get a pilot license, less maintenance than a dog.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And then he has a meme on here. And he says he's watching Better Call Saul, but I don't remember where I left off, so I probably just start at the beginning. Actually, dude, you know what you should do, EK? Watch like the last three episodes of Better Call Saul, and that goes right into El Camino. But what you could do, this is what I did. Like, you can refresh Breaking Bad, like the last season, then jump into Better Call Saul, last three episodes, and then jump into El Camino. It's like the perfect watch. Anyways. Damn.
Wow. But Better Call Saul is like five seasons.
Yeah, I know, but you don't have to. I mean, if you just want to know the ending, because that's all prequel stuff. If you want to just know the ending of like how it all like played out post Better Call Saul or better, you know, Saul Goodman. You just watch, like, the last three episodes. They're all, like, in black and white. It's pretty good, dude. It's actually really good. It's just as good as El Camino.
All right. Did you answer these questions, Carr?
No, let's go with you guys. What did you say, Kim?
I don't think I said anything too much. Where's I don't even remember what I said.
Oh, there you go, right there.
Oh, political climate. Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, I've talked about said. I've talked about this before.
Oh, yeah, you're happy with your president, I
Club
think.
Dev and Club Poet. But, yeah, I said I feel, I mean, I feel less white. I don't know if any, my, you have a, you're also not white, very white. Do you feel, do you not feel a little less white?
I don't even know what that means.
I know, right? It's like a, it's
I'm just kind car.
Of, I just kind of identified this weird feeling where I felt, like before I felt whiter. I don't know what it is. Anyway, I'm kind of joking. I mean, I'm absolutely joking. I'm not like I know I'm not joking. In a crisis, but I actually do feel less white. I feel like I have like less white bona fides. I feel like I. Anyway, that was one thing. Yeah, and a lot of stuff is happening fast. And then I've been thinking about
magic. Apparently,
yeah, magic. Like,
why magic?
Mostly, oh, I guess I was talking to a friend who said that they were thinking about it, and then I started thinking about it a lot, and now I can't stop thinking about it. The
like magic show stuff, or are you?
No, the just I'd say it here, but it's like when you witness magic, you know, that like whatever happens in your brain, where you're like surprised and excited.
That's wonder. That's not magic.
Well, if you experience wonder while you're watching magic, then that is what I'm talking about, but I think there's a variety of other emotions that aren't covered just by wonder. Okay. Do you want to tell me what
I feel? I know you don't like
you can tell me
what I was trying to get that reaction right there. That's the one
you could tell me what
I know you well enough. I knew as soon as I said this, you were going to go into that diatribe.
I know you're buying
just pulling the thing. Pulling the key on little
I haven't really been doing much else. String. So, Austin, do you have answers to this?
I kind of don't.
Really?
Is your political climate?
Wait, what are the... So, okay. Are you starting something new?
Yeah, pleb diffs.
No, not really. I mean, well, it's kind of the same old, you know?
The platform.
Does political climate feel weird? It does feel very weird. I'm thinking back to the insurrection, which everyone should remember. which was a little over 4 years ago,
Trump
January
6th. Trying to overthrow 6th. Our government car. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember... I very, very much remember that time period exactly 4 years ago and just realizing that, like, everything is moving faster. Things are happening so fast. And it was, like, this indication to me of this feeling I had since I joined Bitcoin that I'm participating in history. And, like, 4 years ago, in that time, that's when it really felt, it came alive to me, is that, like, yeah, history is unfolding. And, of course, you know, maybe everyone kind of feels that around election. But, yeah, so, you know, the political climate feels exciting.
More white?
Do I feel more white?
I feel less white. Do you feel more white? I think I asked you this question before.
Man, yeah. I don't have a feeling attached
to, your whiteness?
To my whiteness, which obviously shows my white privilege.
If you, like, probably measured it, would be measured in power and, like, the scale of 1 to 10 of power.
The scale of my thumb on minorities, yeah.
the weight of your whiteness on non-white people.
See, unlike other white people, I actually know my privilege, and I love it.
Yeah, you just gained some additional ones or ones that are a little easier to execute on.
Yeah. So some music being shared in there.
Cool. This is great. I think we're going to jump into the number one top story of the week. Can you believe it? The number one top story of the week. But before we jump into that, I'm interested in new segments now.
Oh, yeah.
Look at this. We're going to jump into the boost. We're going to jump into the boost before we get to the top number one story of the week. We're going to have to wait.
Car's going to make
it. And figure out how to transition the stackers. We'll get better at it in time. This week we have Blockchain Boogie says, enjoy the episodes with Topher in your face, Keon.
I didn't say I didn't enjoy them. I just
right before the show, Boogie said, you can have another guest on.
I was like,
they enjoy it when the stackers.
I was just flirting, Carr.
The stackers enjoy it when there's more than one person talking. You got Gray Ruby said, zap. And we got our guy P.S. Valley for Valley. He said, take mushrooms and take beers. That's what he said. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, together.
Let's jump in to the number one story of the week, and it is open source Bitcoin signing device for less than $25. Oh, nice. This is from SatoChip.
13 comments, 60K boost, 2,173 sets. Baby boy, Keon. What's this?
Oh, yeah. So,
this is neat. $25?
Yeah, you can buy it. You can buy one of these chips. I don't think you have to buy it specifically from any company. These are like these open source cards that have a secure element in them. And then basically this guide describes how you can load into the, you can like flash the whatever's on the thing to be effectively a signing device that can be communicated with through either Sparrow, I believe he lists another wallet, but basically you load a private key onto it, and then you can derive new addresses from it. You can sign with it from the card, like you do. Like basically, you can do everything you can with a hardware wallet, except the seed is generated off device. Is maybe the one important distinction. It's cheap.
So what are the downsides to this, as far as like? Well, obviously, probably won't be as durable, but, like, what's the, what are the ways they can extract that private key? Like, they can't just use, like, a flipper, right, and clone it or something?
No, they can't. I mean, it's like anything, any hardware wallet you're familiar with a secure element on it. The only thing that seems to be different than a lot of these hardware wallets is it can't generate the seed. It appears that you have to import the seed from somewhere else. So, you know, hopefully you're doing that on an air-gapped device. The hardware wallet itself isn't, or the card itself isn't an air gap device. So hopefully you have a computer, maybe you're running Tails, it's not online, you generate the key, and that's it. But that basically describes how you set this up, and you can use it as like a single key in a multi-sig setup. You can do this, I guess, with a YubiKey. There's just like a few standards, I believe they're called like Java card standards.
Have you ever heard of the Sato chip community?
I hadn't heard of it much, but I know CoinKite has their cards. They're like SAT cards.
Tap signers.
Yeah. Which I believe are probably a riff on this. Like some, it's very similar.
Oh, there you go, Sato chip. What is Sato chip? How have I never heard of this? Who's the people behind him?
I don't know.
It's been around. It seems like it's been around for a while. I'm here on wallet scrutiny. Uh-oh.
Yellow flags, crypto stuff. Crypto blogs. Maybe there are crypto people moving into Bitcoin, maybe?
I think thing with the hardware wallets is they're all...
Yeah, it looks like it's a shitcoin thing.
I mean, you can use it for Bitcoin.
Go back.
I can't promote that on
Stack. They had a Sato chip, a Sato dime. Do you see that?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it looks like a shitcoin thing.
Well, it looks like they're heavily inspired by CoinKite.
Man, this is the first time... Sorry, Kian. You're not going to like this, David. I'm going to say it anyway. This is the first time shitcoin company has made it to the top number one story on Stacker News Live.
Oh, I don't.
Bravo. Know.
This is described. I mean, we've discussed things like BISC on here before, and you can buy shitcoins on BISC.
No, but that, like, I totally rabbit hole down into like their Sato chip thing, and
yeah,
there were well played Sato chip, well played.
There were logos. What
does Stacker say? How smart card.
And they're just talking about the fact that they can use it for Bitcoin. It's like,
yeah.
It's like Trezor has a Bitcoin-only hardware wallet that a lot of Bitcoiners like and use.
Java cards, few dollars, yeah. I don't know. That's my thoughts on it.
Yeah, we also, there was someone who wrote a BISC guide, and they're like, this week, that was a very nice guide to BISC, and then like toward the end, they're like, if you want to like automatically coin join your Bitcoin while you're using BISC, you can download a Monero fork of BISC.
Dude, I saw that Monero territory launch this week. I muted it right away.
Yeah, my hope is people will mute it, and if they don't want to see it.
Stacker News is getting infiltrated by
shitcoinery. If that's the reason why territories cost money, because otherwise we'd have to have someone saying this territory can't exist. But instead, they'll be tasked with paying for it and then trying to attract people to it. who want to give them money to make it worth it. And given that most of the site has Bitcoiners on it, who
we need more Darth coins to step up.
It's funny because in an attention economy, if Stacker News worked off of attention, the strategy to go create a territory that everyone hated would actually generate a huge amount of engagement and they would win.
Yeah.
But because it's not only that people will have to engage, because I'm sure a lot of people are looking, like hate looking through it, but they have to give you their Bitcoin. And so that is something that's,
it's weird.
You got to work for.
Cool. That's all the top stories this week, Stackers. We're going to jump into Meta. Keon, what's on Meta?
Oh, yeah. So not a whole bunch, but we, someone that we know did some accessibility improvements. So now screen readers and stuff have an easier time with our price carousel. I'm hoping we can get some more of that done. And then we also, on the IOSP at WA, you weren't really able to sign in with email because iOS doesn't allow you to click a link in your email such that it opens a PWA. So what we had to do was implement a one-time password, and Sox, who has been helping us out recently, implemented that, and it's nice. And it's awesome. A lot of people have asked for that.
Are you going to do the thing where you can switch between accounts now, or no?
You can already do that.
No, it doesn't work for certain ones.
Oh, for certain login methods.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Which ones does it work
that
for?
That would be a question you want to point to EK, because he's the one who worked on that.
Should be here soon, so don't bother.
Yeah, but...
So what's the GitHub? So GitHub bounties looking like here. What do you got? Hot.
You clicked on commits, not you want to click on awards. If you go back.
Oh, hang on.
You click on the
down here.
Yeah, that one.
What are the bounties looking like now?
Oh, we got. I think we got close to. We've given out close to 15 million sats.
What?
And open source contributions, which is pretty awesome. I mean, they're growing pretty fast. It's it's a pain to keep track of them. Like this,
now at this point, look at this.
I think
just for Stacker News,
I think they have like billions of sats.
That's a joke.
We're doing our part. We're supporting open source. We're getting more devs working on Bitcoin stuff.
Oh, they're gonna love that.
No one's gonna talk about it. But
cool, nice.
Yeah.
Next, we're gonna jump into my stories. MicroStrategy changed its name. Do you hear about this? We'll drop this in the news. I don't know.
It's like a nickname. Is really what they did. They gave themselves a nickname.
But it's called Strategy now. Just simply, they dropped the micro.
But it's like other people we know, the strategy, who they go by a name that's not their full name.
But they said they're the world's first and largest Bitcoin treasury company, the largest independent publicly traded business intelligence company in a NASDAQ 900 stock. This brand's implication is a natural evolution of the company, reflecting its focus on broad appeal. New logo includes a stylized B, signifying company's Bitcoin strategy and its unique position as a Bitcoin treasury company. The brand's primary color is now orange, representing energy, intelligence, and Bitcoin. If they were looking, what was that? What was the previous top post that we had where they were like looking for? What was that word, Austin, they were looking for?
What word?
There was like one singular word that they were like, oh, why does Bitcoin have value?
Oh, intrinsic?
There you go. Mike Strand just said, there's your intrinsic value.
Ah.
What do you think about this, Keon?
Well, I'm curious how their software company feels about this now that they're
getting replaced by AI.
They're like, our software company doesn't. I mean, the whole like premise, like the reason why like MicroStrategy is able to do this is because their software business generates cash flow, and so if they increasingly minimize their software business, what is MicroStrategy, or what does Strategy turn into? They can't. You can't just keep you can't only accumulate Bitcoin, I guess, unless you're
I have some thoughts, but they're probably highly
going somewhere. Maybe that's why he's interested in yield, because he's like, he wants to just get rid of the software company and start generating yield somehow. And then what's interesting to me is that no one is going to be able to catch up to Saylor doing this, unless it's like a company that's much, much bigger. No one's going to be able to acquire as much Bitcoin at this stage. He's bought so much Bitcoin. If any like company that was MicroStrategy size 4 years ago tries to go in and do this, they're going to be hundreds of thousands of coins behind him, because they're literally doing every possible thing a company of their size can do to buy more Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It's like...
I think the crazier thing is this sets up the... What we said previously, like, this sets up one of the biggest hacks of all of the century.
Coinbase?
Yeah. Somebody's working on it, I'm sure. What do you got, Austin?
Well, before I was in Bitcoin, I played music. And my band went through a similar name change. And I want to know what you think of it. Originally, my band was called Sabretooth.
Sabretooth.
It was,
like the Wolverine Sabretooth?
Yeah. Okay. But there was actually this old hardcore band called Sabretooth Zombie. Mm. And we would always get kind of mixed in the namespace. And then after time, people gave us the nickname The Tooth. Oh, we're going to see The Tooth. And then we changed our name to Sabretooth to The Tooth.
Why?
Because it was a nickname and it was unique. And it's like The Tooth. It's like, what? Yeah, what
it's
tooth?
Weird. No, it's yeah. Bad. I like it.
And I feel like that's like the micro, because MicroStrategy just kind of blends in, you know, like how an animal name just kind of blends in with band names. But then you're like Strategy. And it's just like, okay, interesting.
Hmm. I think this is setting up for the, I don't know, either the government taking over MicroStrategy or Strategy or this them just becoming the new. Who knows? Whatever this is turning into. Dude, we've reached so many weird timelines here. I don't even know how it's going to play out, but I'm here for it. I'm watching it. It's unfolding before us. Hopefully we'll know within the next 4 or 5 years. But it's happening. Yeah, I agree with Simple Stacker. I thought this was Bitcoin Bugle.
Yeah, it didn't
seem real.
I mean, it's like it didn't seem like they needed to do this. I mean, I thought they would maybe go with MacroStrategy.
I would have much let them just call it Sailor, like, you know.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty cool.
Why not? But strategy is a little, it feels a little soft to me. Like, it doesn't feel.
Yeah, see, like, yeah, that's example right there. Wumble brings up, like, Facebook, Meta, Google, Alphabet, MicroStrategy, Strategy. Like, no one really calls them their new names. They just call them their previous names.
Yeah, it's like they have some identity crisis, and they kind of they think changing their name is going to help them
appeal to them with their new
feelings about their identity.
Yeah. Anyways, thought that was fun. The other thing I wanted to bring up was what KR posted this week. He said Replit agent is insane. He said at 9:04 p.m. I got an email from Replit. He goes, at 9:56, I had a working app with a database.
Less than an hour.
Total game changer. He said, personally, this might be the most empowering product I've ever encountered. So we have this video. I'm going to play it here. But the CEO of Replit is literally showing how he made an app. So he's talking about how they released an agent, and then how he's basically putting like you would put it in a pull out of Jamie, just a syntax, and then it just starts building out the database, the dependencies, and then now he has a running app that he can push to the cloud in like 2 or 3 clicks after this, and then now he has, like, he can show nearby landmarks, but it's pretty incredible. He goes through the whole thing. He even talks about the TED talk that he did. And I think he even says it, like, this is not like the full fleshed out version, but this is the direction that they're headed into. What do you guys think? You guys are, I don't know. Do y'all use Replit or?
I have a few things I want to say is like, just a little, like the origin story of Replit is they started out as like a coding education platform. And what's interesting is that, perhaps without AI, like coding would be unapproachable to someone who wasn't really interested in becoming a programmer. But with AI, now basically anyone can become a programming student, even if they're only like sort of barely interested in it and kind of just want to get a little app going. So they're like AI has, I think this is part of why they're doing so much AI stuff is it's really expanded their customer base. It's like anyone who can prompt an AI is potentially making applications now. And I think that's pretty cool. I know Austin has messed around a lot with Repl-It more than I have.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't use the Agent product very much, almost none. In fact, when it comes up, I'm like, get out of the way.
Yeah.
And this is something I've noticed between, like, a lot of newer developers really love the Repl-It environment and the Repl-It agent for, like, building their first apps, which makes a lot of sense. But for, like, in my camp and the people that, other developers I'm talking to, it's all about Cursor. Because Cursor is what I use all the time, and it's changed my workflow. And it's kind of interesting because new users, they want this agentic workflow, which is a fancy schmancy way of saying multiple steps are executed whenever you give a prompt. Whereas I think a lot of developers that are experienced writing code, we want to be in the feedback loop every integration. So just the best chat experience that's embedded directly in our code, that in the environment we already know and love, is kind of the ideal experience. So I'm curious. I want to play around with this a little bit more and get some my own perspective, but it seems cool. And yeah,
one thing I would say is I think we're the people who are using Cursor. We're like some intermediate dinosaur. We're like, you know, I think most people are probably going to learn coding in an environment like this,
uh-huh,
where it's doing everything. They don't have to worry about deployment. They're not thinking about code as separate from where it ends up living eventually. It's just all in one place. And so in many ways, I feel like our flow, where we're using these text editors that still require us to have the agency to deploy it, mm-hmm, are probably a bit of a dying thing. Not going to die fast, but yeah, like, you know, I expect in 10 years, The editor is the thing that's deploying, and there is, like, no separation of these things.
Yeah. Yeah, I will mention, like, Cursor has the same kind of agentic product, but obviously, like you said, it's not the environment as well. So having the environment built in, I mean, it really puts a new idea of modularity to code, because as a human, I kind of need to compact a lot of my coding ideas, like a lot of what's in pleb devs. I actually want it to live in one repo, but maybe that's backwards. Maybe pleb devs should be like 23 individual Repl-It deployments. And maybe that, like, which to me right now, that sounds ridiculous and stupid, but maybe that's how a lot of these new apps are going to be built, by people that don't know what they're doing and don't need to.
Yeah, they don't need to know what they're doing. And they find an obscure video of yours that you made through a Google search, and they just want it. They want to figure out how to do that one thing and have it deploy and work rather than go through a whole flow.
Yeah.
Like the TikTokification of coding education, where it's like, it's a 30-second education on this one very narrow thing rather than a curriculum.
Yeah. So one interesting thought this reminds me of recently, when I was taking a long drive, I was thinking on the question of AI and development and pleb devs. And I was like, am I being replaced by AI? What I want to do with pleb devs, which is help grow the Bitcoin development ecosystem. And I thought about it for a long, long time. Should I be using AI tools? How should I integrate AI tools? How should I future-proof myself? How should I prepare? And I came all the way back around to the zero principle of, well, I don't want to say real developer, but the developers that are going to make software that really changes the world, like, they're going to be people that care. They're going to be people that care about the details, and they will care about the details because they are the builder. They are the dev. They chose that path. They believe in it. And so I came back around, and it's like, no. In fact, I need to get further away from AI and deeper into narrative crafting, really, because it's like that narrative is what inspires the individual to go do amazing things that in this world of AI will never, the world of AI always will stay in the midwit domain of existence. And it takes greatness and sacrifice to go outside of that. And I think that's the direction I want to go with pleb devs. And all AI is going to do is just make it to where I'm not going to have to teach certain things anymore.
Yeah. Or yeah, you could reduce it to an absurd level where possessing a chisel isn't going to make you a sculptor. Mm-hmm. Like, you can just, if AI is just a chisel, what you really need is whatever a sculptor has that makes great sculptures, and not and not the tool, because the tool is a commodity at some point, mm-hmm. and it's not valuable to anyone.
I think what I'm kind of, at least what I'm hearing, and tell me if I'm wrong, but what I'm kind of hearing right now is it sounds like the development space is going through the same transition the music industry went from when it went from analog to digital. And there's a lot of hesitance to start using digital stuff, but over time the tooling got better, Pro Tools came out, and that like opened up everything. And you still use this analog and digital world. And then what happened? It went full on digital. And then everybody became a bedroom producer, and that had its time. And then now what you're seeing is a harken back to using both simultaneously. And so it makes me wonder is that's what the equivalent of what AI is doing to developers right now, where it's still the early days, like you guys said, there's not really a lot there, but you are, like what you described earlier, is like using Cursor for this. So that's like using something that you wouldn't necessarily use back in the day, but as time gets better,
a year ago, most of us.
Yeah, these plugins are like, at least for me, like some of the plugins that we would have to pay for, or some of the different types of like reverbs and the pedals and stuff, they were like hundreds, $200s of dollars, and you couldn't buy them. You would have to just rent them or get studio time for them. But over time, now you can just go buy a Waves bundle for like $200 or just $59.99 a month or whatever, and now you have access to all these plugins, and they sound just as good as the stuff. So it definitely makes me think like maybe there's that transition that's actually happening for developers now, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the real it kind of comes back around on itself, because you're scared, is my skill set not valuable anymore? Am I being left behind? But where I hope you end up and where I've ended up is like, actually, no, this just furthers my advantage, because it was never about the skills in the first place. It's about the vision and the ideas. And now the distance between a really good idea and a workable average idea, the distance between those are infinite, because anyone has access to just an okay, acceptable, good idea. Anyone can make a platform. So then your unique insight is now infinitely more valuable. And so, you know, that's kind of a positive spin on it. But it's like, you got to be positive. You know, you can't think that the AI is coming to replace your job, because you got to stay on the edge, stay spry, you know?
Yeah, you gotta continue to have a purpose and a reason to live, even maybe once AI has better ideas than you.
Yeah.
Perhaps. You still want to be doing something with yourself.
I also think it's important to remember, like, you know, I've always felt this way, because, I think it really is more about curation, and it is more about like what you're feeding into your brain and different ideas, because. If you don't have taste, if you don't know, and this Sahil talks about this all the time in Design Club, mm-hmm. if you don't have these like anchors of like how you see certain things in what you're creating. And I know I have them in mind, where like, you know, I collaborate a lot. So when I collaborate with new people, I like to steal some of their same type of like anchors. That's a sense, but there's sometimes where I see their anchors, and I'm like, they're terrible anchors. I don't say anything unless they ask. But what you try to do is you try to evolve into just a better artist, into a better creator, into a better whatever you want, whatever that word is for you. And I think that is harder to replace, because it's just pure experience. And all these things are just like tools to help you create that experience. So until I'm not too worried about AI taking over my job. But I do see the, like, kind of KR, what he posted was, like, I do see how this is, like, game-changing.
Well, yeah, I think to your point earlier about the analog to digital and music, I think one thing that's going to be different about AI is that it seems to be getting better a lot faster.
Yeah, totally.
Than a lot of other things, so.
It's going to go really fast. Like, it took, like, 10, 15 years for that to take root, and I think it's going to be, way faster.
Yeah, so I think the changes that you see happen as a result of this, the analog to digital,
it's
here.
It's going
to
be great. I can't wait.
Be so much.
Everything's going to collapse.
Oh, wow. You're rooting on the
No,
collapse.
So, like, there's all these, like, you can kind of feel, you guys can't, you talked about it earlier with that whole vibe check thing, but you can kind of feel it. Like, there's the Trump stuff going on. There's the debasement of our currencies. There's this AI movement. There's a lot of moving kind of like, they're like meteors. There's
a lot of energy.
There's a lot of meteors that are happening all at the same time. And I can't wait till they all collide like asteroids. And it's just going to make destruction in a good way, because after destruction comes creation. So.
Well, but also during destruction comes death. So. Hey.
Dodge bullets. Cool. That was a good one from KR. The next one I want to share is more of like sports stuff, but the Super Bowl is this week, or this weekend, I should say. And it's the Chiefs versus the Eagles. This is going to be the second time the Chiefs have gone to the Super Bowl. Last year, I lost a bet with Uncle Jim. So.
Oh, but they've, I think this, they've, in recent years, they've been just going back to Super Bowl over and over and over again. I think this will be for Mahone. I think this is, I watched one video today about.
Are you going to watch it?
But I think this is like Mahone. This could be Mahone's fourth Super Bowl.
Yeah. It's basically a video game character in real life. Are you going to watch it?
Yes, I'm going to watch it. I promised the Stacker Sports guys that I would watch it and report on it. I made a bet. Not a bet, but I voted for who I thought would win. I'm picking the Eagles. Again, based on one.
You're picking the Eagles, really?
One video. I mean, apparently they have a great defense this year, and also a great offense. Not many injuries relative to the Chiefs was another thing I remember. And I just like them because I think they're a bit of an underdog because
the Chiefs totally, yeah. I just don't like the Eagles because Philadelphia. Rule.
And I think also the defense, what really made me think the Eagles are going to win is the defense pairing with the offense that Kansas City has been showing up with, which is not a whole lot of passing. But
should be a good game. I think the Chiefs are going to win, though, just blow out.
Really?
Yeah. What do you think, Austin?
I think the Chiefs are going to win because of Taylor Swift. That's my analysis.
she's just got some magic to her.
Magic incentives,
Illuminati.
Similar words, similar ideas.
Okay.
The final one I want to share was Luka. You guys don't know this stuff, but Luka got traded to the Lakers.
Are you a basketball?
Dude, like, this is a big deal. This is, like, one of the weirdest trades of all time. Like, and the only reason I'm bringing it up, I'm sorry to step on y'all's toes on discipline, Gray Ruby for Stacker Sports, but this is one of the weirdest trades of all time. And so, basically, the Lakers traded Luka, Maxey, and Markeff for Anthony Davis, Max Christie, and a 229 Los Angeles Lakers first-round pick. But what's crazy, though, Keon, is, like, no one, like, you probably don't know this stuff, and I know you don't care, but this guy, like, literally one of the best NBA players in the game, like literally in the game, draws attention from the crowd, everything. And the Dallas Mavericks have just traded him to the Los Angeles Lakers for basically nothing at this point. And people are complaining because they think the owners, who are these casino, what are they? Gee, they're like casino, I guess like
cartel bosses.
No, they're like. Yeah, they're just, yeah, they just own casinos in Las Vegas, but they came in, they bought the Maz from Mark Cuban. He only owns like 30% of the Maz, but they're saying that they're trying to move the Mavs to Las Vegas, and this is one of the reasons they're doing it. It's just dumping out all the expensive stuff that they have, and Luka's one of them because he was going to get like a max contract during the summer, and he took it in stride, dude. He was just like bummed out. You could tell how bummed out he was, but he's going to the Lakers, and the Lakers is a big global market, and I think he's going to kill it. He'll be playing with LeBron, looking forward to this Lakers dynasty. Anyway, you guys have any thoughts on this?
No, I don't watch basketball. I watch the Super Bowl, but I do not even watch.
Yeah, but look, they were so mad. They were like mad outside. This poor kid, dude, he was like crying because they like traded his favorite player. Poor kid. Oh, man, I feel bad for little kids watching sports.
Man, that kid, he's slaying his heroes right now.
I know.
He's learning an important Bitcoin lesson. He's going to become a Bitcoiner.
Poor guy. I know. He's going to become a Bitcoiner, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That was me, like, in, like, 2016, mad about Bernie. I'm like, you traded away Bernie. He was going to take away all my problems.
Oh, look, they even said another ambush in Dallas. That was kind of dirty. Oh, man. LBJ, LBJ. They're blaming it on LeBron, obviously, because a lot of LeBron haters. But look at this, Jim. You'll love this. Look, dude. Another ambush in Dallas. Luka and JFK. It's so bad, dude. Anyways, Keon's like, what am I?
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, he goes into a whole conspiracy theory about like why they got traded and all that kind of stuff. You know, yeah. Anyways,
he's wearing an Enron hat, which is like
He's like a troll. He's like a YouTube troll.
Do you know the guy bought the trademark and like the company Enron for like $35?
That's amazing. He's making merch for it.
Now he's doing like meme.
Dude, that's exactly
he's basically making an Onion, like the Onion magazine, but for a company where he's coming out with like fake micronuclear reactors and like ads for them. They're also doing scammy stuff.
See, this is where like the cyberspace is meeting the real world. It's crazy. Anyways, that's all the stories this week, Stackers. We're gonna jump into the top. Top stackers of the week. Keon's number one.
I outspent everyone by a factor of four.
Disciplined. Ray Ruby have taken over pretty much Stacker News at this point. Keon's held hostage.
The sports territory is winning.
We might just have to close down Stacker News, just make it stackersports.news.
Well, Ray Ruby was the one who pushed me to start creating territories, so they've gotten their.
What if they like? What if they fork Stacker News and just make Stacker Sports?
Well, that's the eventual goal. Actually, is to have multiple Stacker News.
So we're getting replaced by Stackers. Everybody else is getting replaced by AI. That makes sense.
We're all Stacker News. We're all Satoshi.
That's there you go.
SN. We're all.
I think spin them up, man. I think that'll be good. And that way, if they come whack us here. Yeah. Anyways, we're going to jump into the Cowboys, the most boring segment, or I'm sorry, the most popular segment in Bitcoin,
In the world, not just Bitcoin. Shitcoiners watch this segment.
Apparently now there are shitcoiners on Stacker News, so they are watching
your
this.
Fault. You're the one who brought up that website.
I didn't even know. I had to go dig. It only took two clicks to dig. You still haven't taken yourself. Oh no, you have a triple crown.
I have a triple crown. Lots of people have triple crowns now.
I just bought a triple crown.
Figured them out. The Easter egg has been found. 1.7
blockchain boog.
But it looks like.
Oh, you weren't here the other day. Blockchain boog was like praising you for your pleb dev stuff. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, you got fans.
Hey, let's go, blockchain boog.
Let's go.
Are you learning how to code? I think. Wait, no. Yeah, he was the one posting about. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I responded. He was praising to you. He was like,
"That's cool."
Yeah.
My new thing. I forgot to do this, but Boog, drop me your GitHub. I'm gonna follow you, and if you stop pushing code, I'm gonna just reach out
You're
to
gonna
you
gonna
one
push
day.
Push him.
Yeah, I'm gonna push you physically.
Yeah. I like blockchain Boog. He's a great guy.
He is cool. He did an ad in No BS Bitcoin.
Oh, did he really?
Stacker stocks territory.
For the what?
For a Stacker Stocks territory.
Oh, wow. I'm sure they enjoyed that. We got TN Stacker, Gray Ruby, Public Enemy, Satosaurus.
Jason B. Let's go.
Jason B.
He's somewhat of a new kind of what Stacker legend, right?
Yeah.
He's a new entrant, new generation.
What he's racking up legendary points.
Oh,
sure.
Okay. What does Oppenheimer teach us about CBDCs? I get behind that.
I'm telling you, the amount of thoughts the Stackers have, sometimes it overwhelms me. I have like 3 thoughts a day.
They do have, they are, I mean, but these are several people's minds.
I've noticed over, it's true. I've so noticed over time,
people,
like,
three ideas.
I've noticed over time, like, even this show has gotten longer, and I think it's because the Stackers are, like, making us think way harder.
They're evolving.
But I think this time next year is going to be, like, a 4-hour podcast just to get through 5.
Yeah, they're like, answer the object subject, you know, philosophical question, and we're like, okay.
Yeah, body-mind duality, ghost. Go
yeah.
I'm going to have to keep up, man. I'm going to be like, explain that to me. Anyways, you got a lot of triple crowns, even down. What's the last triple crown at the bottom?
Oh, there's probably some triple crowns at
the bottom. Oh, EK. Boom.
EK.
So does it go further than that?
He also said he's eventually going to do the overlay zap thing.
So oh yes, yeah. He messaged me today. He said he's going to come in.
Okay,
to blah blah, but then he'll do it. Cool. So it looks like EK is the lowest stacker with triple crowns.
Triple crown.
That's everything, stackers. Keon, Austin, what are you guys doing this weekend?
What are you doing, Austin?
I'm making a YouTube video.
About?
I'm trying to make a YouTube video about everyone is a scammer.
Okay.
The article written by Bitstein, and I want to, like, explain that I am a scammer as well somehow. I want to, like, kind of, like, yeah. So I'm playing around with that. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Everyone's a scammer. That's like, what do you mean? Like, as far as like this cycle, or you?
It's like a mindset for how to survive in Bitcoin. Almost, it's like everyone's a scammer, and you're even watching me. But like, I'm going to tell you that I'm a scammer. Look, I'm trying to sell you this course. Like, even I'm a scammer, right? So you can't even trust on me, and you clicked on my video. I don't know. There's something there.
I never really understood. Like, to be honest, I never really understood that. I mean, I understand the meme and stuff, but I never really understood like.
Well, I think the meme and the point I'm trying to like make is that what no one will tell you about Bitcoin is that it's a game of survival, and almost no one survives, and that you are fundamentally alone. You are on your own. And if you understand that first and foremost, then that will actually give you the armor to go work with other people and go interface with the world of Bitcoin a little bit better, you know?
That's one way to think about
okay,
it.
Okay. Well,
I'll watch the video.
We'll see.
Yeah. We'll have to decide whether we agree once we hear the whole.
But I love that you're making your own points and like standing on them. I love
this
that.
This is Bitstein's point. This is not my point.
So you are scamming us.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't even not even my idea.
Well, there you go. We got to start labeling pleb devs.
But making videos like is maybe more consistent with people's expectations of content these days. Yeah. So like you're modernizing Bitstein for them.
Yeah. Maybe. Something like that.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
What are you doing this weekend, Keon?
I don't really know.
Oh, I saw that movie Companion this week.
Oh.
Dude.
Did I recommend that to you?
No, you should watch it. It's like an AI. Oh, spoiler, alert.
Is that the one with Megan Fox?
No. It's like it's the one who got the guy who made Barbarian. It's the same director, I think.
I thought that was Megan Fox in that one.
No, it's not. It's so good, though. You should watch it. It's like, it's definitely Ex Machina level.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, well, not that high level, but like.
It's like where a dude starts like.
No, like just, it's like a, it's like a, how do you say, like a, it's, I've been wanting this whole kick lately, like Y2K and like that. It's like, it falls into that type of movie.
Oh, no, it's like a bit, it's like millennial nostalgia porn.
No, it's of our times for sure, but it's worth watching.
Okay.
Maybe don't take a date though, because it's like a.
Okay,
I'll have a weird conversation.
I'll swipe the other direction on my dating apps.
Anyways,
yeah, I don't really have anything I'm doing, but you're not watching Companion because you've already watched it. What are you doing?
I have to work. There's just so much stuff that I got behind this week.
We're boring. We should make a YouTube video.
Yeah, they used to do that thing in the 90s or in the 2000s where they would just put like a webcam at their desk. Remember that?
Oh, where they would just
show them working. That was a thing in the 2000s.
That's how that popular streaming service got started. What's it called?
Chat Roulette?
Twitch.
Twitch. Yeah, that's how
Justin
Twitch
TV.
Got Justin TV.
Yeah, it was just everybody showing them working. I always thought that was creepy. I was like, why would you want to see yourself working? Like, see other people working.
I predicted years ago, and this hasn't come to pass, so it's a bad prediction, that that people would win presidency. They would be able to win the presidency through transparency, and that eventually the winning strategy would literally be nonstop stream everything you're doing for a year, which people do this already, but they do it as like dumb influencers. But like Trump almost got to this level. But if Trump had a guy walking around with him at all times with the camera,
live streaming,
you think of how powerful that would be, the amount of clips and engagement that would generate.
I feel like Gary Vee does that already, doesn't he? Like Gary Vee does it.
Well, that's like the start of it, right? Mm. You start super curated, you do all the filming, and then it just gets to the point to where you are live at all times,
watching him take a dump and stuff. Yeah, that makes sense.
But you probably blur it. Probably have like some good filters. No,
I think people that would follow him probably don't want to.
Oh, there'd
see
be like people who are really.
They
want to
see
those
yeah
parts of that.
There was a girl who was live on Twitch for a little over 2 years recently.
Her
and
whole
she,
life.
She only had like a few hundred subscribers, and then like someone I think it was actually like Crypto Cobain or someone, like, found out she had been live for 3 years and just like sent her $100,000. And then she got like all of this, all of these viewers. So it's kind of funny. Like, you can literally just go stream the longest, and like after about 2 years, you'll just become rich and famous.
No, but I'm saying like she was just streaming her like life, or just like her just
literally play video games, talk to the camera, point the camera at the wall when she's in the bathroom, point, you know, the camera at her feet when she's taking a shower.
What happened when she went to work though?
I don't think she worked. I think she had already like.
Oh wow! So she maybe, was just like in prison or something.
Yeah.
Sort
no.
of. The prison of her own making.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
she
wild.
She wanted to be in that prison.
There was a Japanese movie about that where some guy entered a contest and they made him like stay in kind of a similar format, and they were recording him. It was like a real life Truman Show, but he was forced in this like box. Super crazy, but they made a documentary about it. I think it won a couple awards. Forget the name.
That's just employment nowadays. That's what we call employment.
That's how people get paid now that AI is coding.
Yeah. All right, Snackers. You guys have a great weekend. Keon.
Zap.